This Sports Hub On Demand content is brought to you by Fraser Engineering. Fraser Engineering is now hiring pipe fitters, plumbers, and HVAC techs to join their team with great pay and benefits. Apply now at FraserEngineering.com. Fraser Engineering, great people doing great work.
B-Pod Studios.
I'm just trying to spell it out for the listeners.
Felger and Mast.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
T-E-P-I-D.
B-O-B.
Boob.
Isn't that Bob?
Felger and Mast.
Q-U-I-T quit.
Okay, thank you. No, spell up for me too. I'm an idiot.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, I can't say enough about the resilience of this team. Guys stepping up when they had to. And it's going to sound like a broken record, but that's what makes this team great. That's why they're world champs, is our best players stepped up in the most crucial and critical moments. You end up losing some guys. Guys were asked to step up. I just can't say enough about how much I love this group. They played for one another. There's something really powerful about being a part of something bigger than yourself. And you could see that the way that these guys competed. Love these players, love these coaches, and they're world champs. And I'm glad I don't have to listen to Gary give me any shit anymore.
Again, whoever Gary is, we don't know, we don't care, didn't bother even look it up. But that Sean McVay postgame after the Super Bowl blowing somebody. So that's how we'll lead off, because it's the final Big Boy Tuesday of the football season. Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal joins us in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Greg Bedard is brought to you by the Granite Group. The Granite Group is an award-winning distributor of Mitsubishi Electric's heating and air conditioning systems with locations across Massachusetts and New England. Learn more at customizedcomfort.com. Big Jim Murray, Maz, alongside as well. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Peachy, thank you so much. You think Sean McVay's the main takeaway from the Super Bowl. Greg, why?
Well, I just think, you know, what he's done, and you covered a lot of it yesterday, what he's done in a short period of time, the consistency that he's done it, the proliferation of the Shanahan-McVay tree around the league. This was sort of the crowning achievement. You know, one of his former assistants going head-to-head in the Super Bowl, McVay getting that Super Bowl title. You contrast that to what's going on here, what has gone on here with the offshoot of the Belichick coaching tree. And to me, it's the Shanahan-McVay world, NFL world, and we're all living in it.
Are we behind? Are we, like, suddenly behind? Are the Patriots suddenly behind the curve that is the direction of the NFL?
Well, I look at it this way, Mike. You know, I view it as a really nice local steakhouse. You know, great chef.
Yeah.
Great choice of meat.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to be any bigger than that. That was Belichick and Brady.
This is an interesting analogy for you. Are you hungry?
No.
You can have protein.
salad bar for you now, buddy.
And then you have the Shanahan McVay tree, which is now sort of like the Capitol Grill. You know, they're all over the place. Pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, is it as great as the one guy staying local? I just want to have a great steakhouse in my hometown. Probably not, but still pretty damn good. And I think that, you know, Belichick and Brady were a unicorn. I mean, I think you look over the history of the NFL since the salary cap era started, they're a bright, shiny unicorn that we will never, ever see again. And once Belichick decides to retire, we'll never, ever see it again. And the next best thing that you can do is what Shanahan and McVay are doing.
So to me, this all plays into something that we said yesterday, or started with yesterday, and it occurred to me as you talk about McVay, if you were a young coach right now, and you could go, you know, an assistant, what's the word I'm looking for, an aspiring coach, okay, yep. You're a young guy that wants to join a staff, who would you rather work for, McVay or Belichick?
McVay, clearly. I mean, look, the joke has been in the past couple of years, and Zach Taylor made the joke this week during Super Bowl week, that if you have a cup of coffee with Sean McVay, you're going to get a head coaching job. And that's, you know, and the thing is like everybody makes it about McVay because he got the head coaching job first. But really, this is a little bit Mike Shanahan, a lot Kyle Shanahan. All these guys were Kyle Shanahan's guys in Washington. They were sort of the rat pack. And Bert knows it probably better than anybody because he's in close with those guys. But that's where it started. And to me, it's, they have a system I don't love some of their game management. I think they all get stuck too much in their play sheet and don't delegate enough, and I think that's where they come up short at times. But I think in terms of, you know, it's almost a franchise. You know, it's like you have the system, the offensive system. You figure out it defensively. You get a couple really good players. You put the ball in the hands of those players in the biggest moment. You figure out a way to do that. And from there, and I also think a big component of this, and I wrote about this the other day, is their willingness, Kyle and Sean's willingness to share, to bring these other coaches along, to coach up the coaches, to enable the players to be a little bit more free, have a little bit more fun, show their personality, deal with their personality. I think that's sort of where they've gone to the next level, where you look at Belichick and his tree and you might be like, well, maybe those guys are stuck a little bit in the past. A
little more player coaches.
Yep.
Okay. So that will tie into this current state of the Patriots staff. So we're going to talk football with Greg. It's the final time this football season, in his regular in-studio two-hour stint. I'm sure we'll check in, free agency, draft, etc. So we're going to talk some football. Any leftover Super Bowl thoughts, by all means, at 617-779-0985. So you contrast the McVay staff and tree and the success and feels like the wave that's going on in the NFL to what's going on in New England. What is going on in New England? If you haven't heard today, there was breaking news. They did name a new director of player personnel. I don't know if that's exactly the title, but, the new Scott Pioli, if you will, the new Thomas Dimitroff, the new Dave Ziegler.
No, that's the title, director of player personnel.
And it's Matt Groh. So if the name sounds familiar, it should, because it's a kid of a coaching friend of Belichick's in Al Groh. But that is the new guy, elevated. He worked with Ziegler, right?
Yep.
And so now has been elevated to the top spot. They still have no defensive coordinator, no offensive coordinator. And I think Maz raises an interesting point. We've talked forever about the Patriots being a destination for players or not a destination for players. Is it not a destination for coaches? Is it not? And do they even want outside coaches? And what the hell's going on? Where do they stand? Okay, that's what I want, Greg. So I know that's not a directed question. What are they doing on the offensive side of the ball, do you think?
I don't think the door is closed on Bill O'Brien. I do think the Patriots are somewhat delayed in their timeline. For whatever reason. I mean, Mike Reese wrote this weekend that the coaches were coming in this week after a couple weeks off. And I don't think it's a coincidence that that they've been behind a little bit. Like, Joe Judge thing happened last week. And I only think that happened when everybody was off, because I think if he didn't have an offer from Vegas and Josh McDaniels, then it was strongly hinted at, like, hey, you can come over here, because I do think he was the first choice to be special teams coordinator. Then Judge probably went to Bill and said, look, I have this option. I'd love to come back, maybe work on the offensive side of the ball, what have you. So I think they're playing catch up a little bit. And not that I think Bill thinks he needs to. I think Bill is very comfortable the way things have gone. But offensively, I don't think the Bill O'Brien thing is done yet. I do think that has to do with the timing, and maybe that ramps up a little bit more. It would be my plan A, that's for sure. I think him coming in, and there's a guy who has not shown up in Vegas, who I thought was going to, Jerry Schablinski, who was the quarterback's coach here, went with Judge to New York. He would be a guy that could easily come in and be the quarterback's coach here, if not the offensive coordinator. But I do think Nick Caley's in line there first, if it's not O'Brien.
Greg, do they have
a plan?
That's why
Lombardi left.
Do they have a plan? Are they dialed in? Or are they just sort of
reacting,
flying by the seat of their pants, reacting, waiting to see what's there, and we'll figure it out?
They're reacting. This is what they always do. This is why Josh agreed to become the Colts coach. All this stuff just happens on Bill's timeline. Bill doesn't bother with it until he needs to.
What happened to one step ahead, got all the answers, playing chess while everyone else plays checkers? I thought he was always a step ahead of everybody. It feels like in this stuff, he's just, we'll figure it out when we get there. I'll figure it out. And that's not a step ahead. That's just sort of reacting, making the best of a bad situation. I feel like that's happening on the staff.
Yeah, and I don't think that Bill getting more involved on offense when the defense and special teams have been falling apart is a good plan either, if that's the fallback plan. Well, Bill's just like, I'll handle it at 70 years old, doing even more and more. I don't know if I want that.
I was just going to say, how many at his age How many holes can he patch? And you know what? I'll tell you what. Take the age out of it. How many holes can one coach patch, period? So if you're losing McDaniels, now you have new people in personnel, or at least in new jobs inside of personnel, and you're only going to promote from within historically, or you're going to bring in your flunkies and sycophants from other places. How many places can he be in at once? It's like, well, what's this, multiplicity? He's going to reproduce himself and, like, you know, Bill's going to coach every aspect of the team? How can he do that?
I mean, it's one thing, like, he can get away with some of it because so much of it is behind the scenes. The positional coaching, what goes on during practice, during the week, like all of that, we don't know how bad it is or good it is. And he can sort of hide it. They need a play caller. On coming up this season, on Sunday, someone is going to have to be standing there with the play sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be there for the world to see. Because we'll see the plays, we'll see the guy on the sideline, and you can't hide that. You can't hide the offensive play calling on Sunday. They've hidden the defensive play calling on Sunday, but you can't do that offensively. You just can't. One guy has the sheet over his mouth. Who's that going to be? And if it's not Bill O'Brien, who is it? Are we still on Adam Gase, Jimmy? Do we have any follow-ups on that from you from yesterday? Adam Gase apparently has been at practice and started being at practice early in the season. And
preseason, dating back to the preseason.
Dating back to preseason, where, you know, I guess you would have seen it if it was in the preseason.
Nah, well, not midway through. They close up.
Okay.
I don't recall seeing him there. Maybe I missed him.
But either way,
Zoe had said earlier on the midday show with Zolak and Bertrand that Mike Shanahan had also been around the team during the course of this season.
Okay, well,
I
don't think Mike Shanahan's going to come here and be the offensive coordinator.
But I'm just putting in perspective is that I had not heard Mike Shanahan or Adam Gase be reported as being around Patriot team practices. So it's possible that Gase could have come in the back door and still been there and it not be reported.
Got
Absolutely.
It. Okay, well,
thank you.
So what are they doing there? And do they have a plan? Because it doesn't feel like it. All right, so leftover Super Bowl thoughts with the big boy, Patriots offseason thoughts with the big boy, with your calls at 617-779-0985 right after this.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Miller Lite is celebrating the 75th anniversary of the 17-time world champion Boston Celtics with a limited edition commemorative 18-pack, now available at participating stores. So pick up the 75th anniversary 18-pack today and raise the original light beer to Boston Celtics basketball. Miller Lite. It's game time. It's Miller time.
Charges may apply.
The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's my misgiving on all of this. We presume the Patriots would have an airtight succession plan to take care of Tom Brady's departure. They really didn't. God bless him, Mac Jones came to them. Whether that's grand design or good luck, I don't know. But now that they have him, they have a more than competent rookie quarterback, second-year quarterback on his rookie contract. Now there's so much ambiguity around the offense. They've lost the best coordinator on either side of the ball in the game in Josh McDaniels. So what are they going to do to shore that up? I'm not saying that Carmen Brasillo and Mick Lombardi are the second coming of any great coaching pair, but that's more attrition. Ivan Fears may retire. More attrition. Dante Scarnecchia, one of the greatest assistants of all time, out the door. Meanwhile, you didn't force a punt during the playoff game. You barely forced a punt. I don't know if they forced a punt in the other preseason game. The playoff game blotted out the final regular season game against the Bills. So, to me, it's okay to say Bill has a plan, but when you have a team that's gone 21-22 since Halloween of 2019, I'm not sure this is as airtight and a certainty that Bill Belichick has a plan as we all presume it to be.
I'm into that. Tom Curran last night on NBC Sports Boston. He wrote something similar for the website. He says, if you're still living with the blind faith that Belichick's master plan for success in the 2020s was to say so long to Tom Brady, Nick Caserio, Josh McDaniels, Dave Ziegler, Monty Ossenfort, Ernie Adams, Dante Scarnecchia, and Brian Flores, then blow almost the entirety of every draft from 2017 through 2019, and then welcome Matt Patricia and Joe Judge back to the staff after each man flamed out spectacularly with the Lions and Giants, you might need a gentle nudge back into reality. Has the greatest coach in pro football history earned the benefit of the doubt? Of course he has. But it's not sacrilege to point out the Patriots have been bobbing along aimlessly on the waves of mediocrity for 2.5 seasons now, all while the team has been simultaneously losing coaching and personnel staff. Since Halloween 2019, the Patriots have gone 21-22. Their post-December 1 record in the past three seasons is 7-11. There's no need to relitigate the Brady departure. No need to ponder whether Mac Jones was good planning or great luck. No need to lament the failed selections of Cyrus Jones, N'Keal Harry, Jawan Williams, Isaiah Wynn, Chase Winovich, and point out who the Pats could have had. But with the 2021 season officially over as of Sunday, the question now is, how impressive is the contingent of Patriots employees charged with bringing them back to prominence? It's all a fair question. Aren't you worried, Maz?
Absolutely, I'm worried. There's no question I'm worried. So I just think that you can only have so many people bail before you start to look at it and say, okay, how are you going to plug all these holes? And I'll tell you, in a lot of ways, I'm more worried about the coaching staff than I am about the roster because of Bill's methods. And when I say his methods, he typically likes to bring those coaches from within, you know, raise them, rear them, teach them, plug them in. So it's they're his from birth. Well, where are the new guys coming from? Because it doesn't feel like the next wave is remotely ready to take on a big job.
No, it's why he's bringing guys back. Well, partly he's bringing guys back because they're free. Someone else is paying their salaries, but that's another way to do it.
Right. And so when he's done that with the roster, when he's brought back these guys for the second trip through, we've talked about this, you don't really quite get the same effect. Like Kyle Van Noy, just to use as a quick example because he's here now. Okay, he was okay this past year. Was he good? Was he as good as he was the first time through?
No.
And the answer is no. And so I think you run the risk of sort of just playing the same songs over and over again and never evolving.
And now Mike Reese, you know, writes over the weekend exploring the possibility of Matt Patricia on the Patriots offensive coaching staff. So what's up with that, Greg? Give me just a thought on that.
I don't really have one other than if Reese is writing it, somebody's telling him that. He doesn't invent things out of thin air. You know, he hides things well when he writes things and sort of drops nuggets. But I don't know. I don't get it at all. And, you know, I think Tom's points are well taken. And, you know, and I'll throw on top of it, you know, their decision to promote Matt Groh. They had Elliot Wolf there. Elliot Wolf has way more experience in terms of the NFL, the pro personnel side. I was just going through it, you know, because they had Pioli, then Caserio, then Ziegler. Matt Groh is the first personnel executive, Belichick's right-hand man, basically director of player personnel, that is coming from the college side. He has, on paper, he has zero pro personnel experience. You know, to me, that's a bit scary. You know, and to me, this is, all right, well, Elliot Wolf has a lot more experience, but he's only been here 2 years. Matt Groh's been here 11 years, has come up through the system. It's the same thing as at offensive coordinator. Well, Nick Caley has more experience, so he's the next guy up. So Mike Lombardi says, well, I'm blocked, same as Patrick Graham. That's why he left, because he saw guys in front of him that were blocking him because he knows Belichick's just going to promote the guy with the most experience. Not the best guy, the guy with the most experience here. Or, you know, in terms of tenure.
I just worry that a lot of the time it's about what's comfortable for Bill. You know, it's, well, this is the guy that I know and what I'm comfortable with.
Of course.
With.
Urban
yeah,
Meyer quote.
Yeah. So it's about what's comfortable for Bill. And I don't want Bill to be comfortable anymore. I think Bill needs to be pushed at this stage. Bill likes to push people. And again, this isn't a quid pro quo, like I'm doing this to you because you did it to everyone else. I just think that, you know, I know he's 70. But Brady's not here. They have to evolve. Bill needs to be pushed too.
Let me just say one thing. Like, look, this is not over. I do think a lot of Adam Gase as an offensive mind, as just an offensive coordinator. I do think that he's really good. It's there on film. Bill's seen it. That's why Bill likes him. He knows how to attack defenses. He knows how to develop quarterbacks. Ryan Tannehill, I think it was 2016, before he had that knee injury, it was almost like a Josh Allen revival, what Adam Gase did with Ryan Tannehill that season before he tore up his knee. Matt Moore was also pretty good, and they almost won playoff games that way. I do think that, look, it's not over yet. Bill can pull rabbits out of his hat. I mean, look, if you were a dream scenario right now for the Patriots, you bring back Bill O'Brien, He's offensive coordinator, heads up the quarterbacks. Jerry Sapolsky comes in. He has experience, was under McDaniels, knows what to do, and you bring back Brian Flores to be the defensive coordinator. And then you also have Joe Judge. And
you think that's anywhere on the table?
I don't know.
How does that conversation begin? Not through a text, I would say. I would have Bill's people call his people. No track record. I mean, that feels like a reach at this juncture.
I'm sure it is, but I'm just saying, you know, it's not out of the total realm of possibility. I highly doubt that it happens. But if that happened, then you have two former head coaches on staff, including Joe Judge, who could help special teams a little bit. And Matt Patricia helps in different ways. Then it's not so bad.
At this point, it's getting serious. You know, like the defensive side's frustrating enough. But now you got a young quarterback who needs the right mentor. And then the whole piece of that public figure on Sunday with the play sheet. They need someone who can handle that, the whole piece of that. And that ain't Matt Patricia, I don't think. What a nightmare. What a disaster.
If it's not O'Brien, it better be Gase. It better be.
Okay, and I'm okay with that, you know, as opposed to Nick Caley, who no one knows, or Matt Patricia or Joe Judge. And I don't think those are realistic possibility. I can't believe that they would be. But that's not a small thing. Let's grab a couple calls here. Here's Mike in Haverhill. What do you got, Michael?
I just wanted to say, I think the Rams winning the Super Bowl is absolutely fantastic for the league, because there's a team over the last couple of years that sort of approached the draft and sort of spending in free agency in a completely different way. And it is a copycat league. And one of the things we always complain about is sort of how dull the trade deadline is in the NFL. And if this ends up bringing a little bit more activity in during the trade deadline, during the season, player movement, I'm all for it.
Well, let me tell you, Mike, and it's not just the cap and the spending thing, which I obviously fixate on, but it's the maybe teams will or they should reevaluate the value of a first-round pick. In other words, two first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. I know he didn't have a good game, but that's a good player that you can bank on.
Hell yeah.
And it cost him two firsts. Are the odds better that you're going to get, you know, the floor for a Jalen Ramsey for two first-round picks is probably better than you making those picks? You're going to hit on one, miss on the other. You know, it's like the odds for anyone, even good drafters. Not all those picks work out. But if you trade him for someone bona fide, don't you think your odds are better? Like, I'd like to see the nerds go in the back room and sort of do those calculations.
Yeah, look, depending on the age of the player, okay, when Ramsey switched over, Ramsey's young. So I would say yes. So look, Mike,
it doesn't always work out, though. Adams didn't work out for Seattle, that trade. You know,
he's a pretty good player. I don't know. I mean, the nerd has to go in the back room and tell me what my odds are in hitting those two picks and what Adams has brought me in Seattle. And it's like, I don't know. Adams might be a safer bet than making two first-round picks. He might be.
So again, I would say, you know, there are a lot of variables there. But I would say if you're talking about a guy in his mid-20s and he's a, you know, all-pro caliber player or something close to it, I'll take that guy.
Well, I mean, I would go back to what Bill seemingly used to do, which is, all right, especially where the Rams are drafting. You know, they say, because most years, you know, a guy might be drafted in the first round, but he's not a first-round player. Like, once you get past 18, you know, then it gets iffy every year, depending on it. Now, first-round pick, do I think I'm getting a no-doubt guy? Okay, I'm making the pick. Like, they picked Aaron Donald up in the first round, you know. But trade it. You know, and either trade it for a player or trade down for multiple picks in the second and third and fourth round. Because that's where you need to hit.
Okay, but I would, instead of the Patriots' approach is just the opposite. If we're drafting in the second half of the first round, we think the thing to do is to trade down for multiple picks. Where the Rams have just showed you, maybe the play there is to trade it for a player
who
you can more closely evaluate, and you're better at evaluating on the pro level versus the college level, which is a real crapshoot. I'd like to see that be a trend in the league.
Yes, but you also have to be able to hit on your second and third round picks. I mean, you have to get Cooper Kupp in the third round. You have to get Van Jefferson in the second round. You have to do that more often than the Patriots have, and then you're freed up to do that.
Well, the real reason they probably do it is the economics.
And that's it, too. You got to pay Jalen Ramsey.
Right, exactly. 100%. So they look at it and they say, well, we can pay Sony Michel or Isaiah Wynn at the end of the first round a fraction of what we have to pay Jalen Ramsey, and we get two players out of it.
Never mind the basket full of third and fourth round picks you get after the trade down.
I think the big thing there is the money. Because I bet you if you do it purely by talent, I bet you're right.
Safer bet.
Yes, absolutely. But the problem is you got to pay the money, and nobody wants to do that.
Okay, we'll pick it up with your calls on the other side and three up, three down from the Super Bowl. After Murray gets you updated, there was breaking news with the Patriots today.
If you own a home and are not using the sun to offset your energy bills or provide a backup power source during a blackout, it's time to do what I did and contact Devlin Solar. Devlin Solar is bringing affordable green energy to New England by using the latest solar technology to provide efficient energy solutions. To see if your home qualifies for solar, call 800-818-5641 or visit devlinsolar.com. They put a system in my home, and it's great. So do what I did. Reduce or eliminate your energy bills and power your home through a blackout with Devlin Solar, the most trusted solar company in New England. Financing is available through Sunnova. Don't wait. Call 800-818-5641 today.
They vary.
Do you believe in moral victories? A good loss? We'll get them next time.
No silver linings here on Felger and Mazz.
Then you are in the wrong place.
You have to accept that, so we...
Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And now, it's time for three.
Jones with time. Throwing the deep ball down the left side. And
what a throw.
Three down.
This is one of the worst throws he's had.
With Greg Bedard from BostonSportsJournal.com. Three up.
Bucks win the Super Bowl. And there the Cannons go.
Cannon.
Fire them. Keep on firing them.
Three down.
He sucks.
He blows.
On Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Let's do this. Super Bowl edition. Big boy Greg Bedard from Boston Sports Journal. Three up, three down is presented by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. Enjoy the game with a triple distilled, triple cast matured, and triple blended Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. Game time is Tully time. Please drink responsibly. Give me your number one star in the Super Bowl, Greg.
Cooper Kupp, the MVP. I mean, especially after Beckham went out, he was really the only viable target. Great route runner, tough after the catch. Thought he did a great job.
Aaron Donald. Defensive lines in this game were both terrific. Aaron Donald, I thought, was the best player on the field. He's phenomenal.
Number two, Greg.
I have Andrew Whitworth, the left tackle.
Oh, you know it.
He pitched a shutout his final game. Walter Payton, man of the year, pitched a shutout. Cam Akers was at fault on that sack when he blocked Whitworth instead of, you know, the rusher. And Whitworth was awesome.
Nothing like an old fat guy for Greg to put on the list.
Perfect.
Sam Hubbard, defensive lineman, Cincinnati. Underrated play in this game was the underrated overall play performance. Was the Cincinnati front seven. They were good. They completely bottled up the run. And that guy was a factor. Look, I love Logan Wilson. I thought he was terrific, but too obvious a choice. This guy, Hubbard, on the line, excellent.
Okay. Third star.
Pratt. Wilson and Aaron Donald were very close, but I went with Von Miller. He had six pressures in this game, two sacks in this postseason. And this is more of a, I thought he was the postseason defensive MVP.
Really? Better than Donald?
He had 22 pressures total in the postseason.
22,
according to Pro Football Focus, including four sacks. I mean, he was, to me, if they didn't have Von Miller out there, then you can take care of Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
But having Von Miller there to offset, that's what they didn't have against the Patriots, that makes the difference.
And I'll tell you, man, when Von Miller smells it, he smells it. He's one of those guys. When he gets close and he's hunting it, watch out. He's still that player. He's a free agent after the year, isn't he?
He is. Mm-hmm.
He'd be a good Patriot.
He would.
He'd be a good Patriot.
Bill likes him.
But does he set the edge?
No.
Does he take on blockers?
He's better against the run than a lot of people give him credit for.
What's his weight? What's his height and weight? What's his wingspan? Bill on those edge guys, the big elephant guys,
like
6'5". He wants 6'5", 250. He wants McGinnis, Vrabel. That's what he wants.
I think Mettler's actually decent in coverage too, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. I don't, does he check the Bill boxes?
6'3", 250.
Okay. I mean, I think it's asinine. I'm asking that how big he is to see if he fits Bill's system. But does Von Miller fit Bill's system? No. The answer is no. He'd be a good Patriot. He'd be good here. I'd like to see Von Miller with Bill Belichick. That just occurred to me. Okay, who's your third star?
Okay, this guy was only out there about half the snaps, but again, defensive lineman for the Rams, A'shaun Robinson. What a freaking moose
good player
that guy
in Detroit,
is.
Too.
What a moose. He was a force in this game. And again, he wasn't out there at times about a little less than half the snaps. But when he was in there, I noticed him.
Three down, number one dud, Greg.
See that? Bedard, I picked the fat guy just for you.
Bengals right tackle Isaiah Prince. It was terrible. Seven pressures in this game. He was awful.
Jalen Ramsey, you sucked in this game. Ja'Marr Chase beat you deep. He gave up the big play. I think Ramsey's a little overrated in general, but biggest stage in sports. Biggest stage in sports. You're all this hype of the best corner in the league. And, you know, you gave up a couple of huge plays.
Second down there, Greg.
Bengals right guard, Hakeem Adeniji.
Here we go.
I thought going into this game, the right side of the Bengals offensive line could very well cost them the Super Bowl. This guy gave up 5 pressures, 3 sacks in the game. I mean, that's just awful from the right side of your line.
Greg's acumen is much more acute than mine. I just put the whole Bengals whole line in at number 2. Seriously, they held, and I didn't put them in number 1 because in the early part of the game, I thought they held up okay. Under the circumstances, again, that's like an all-world defensive line that the Rams are putting out there. And I thought for the most part, they kind of hung in there. And then in about the second half of the third quarter from there, they got smoked. Absolutely freaking smoked.
Third dud.
Jalen Ramsey. I did not think he was good in this game.
Atta
I thought
boy,
that, that first play on the final drive where he tried to undercut it and got burned, that could have cost his team the Super Bowl right there. I thought he gambled way too much in this game, and that he got outplayed by a rookie.
Joe Burrow, you were the biggest advantage you had over the other team. You're better than the other quarterback. You needed to make plays in this game. And I know you didn't have much protection. I don't care.
Surprised a certain someone didn't land on your 3 down list. How about you, Murray? Who? Give me your 3 down.
My 3 down would have been Burrow, all the Cincinnati offensive line.
Do it. Who's third?
Oh, Matt Stafford.
Thank you. I was waiting for that.
I'm waiting for it.
I was waiting for that from you two.
I'm on a higher plane.
I got a question for you, Greg, about this game. So with the Patriots and the mess that they have defensively when it comes to the coordinators, it's like coordinator by committee. Is enough being made about what McVay and the Rams have done defensively and how they've adapted, consider all the turnover at coordinator the last few years? Or could any dummy do that job because they have Aaron Donald?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, when I look at the Rams defense and, you know, they've gone from Wade Phillips to Brandon Staley to I don't even know who
Raheem Morris.
Oh, Raheem Morris, who I think is an excellent coach. I like how it almost seems like McVay thinks, and I think this is accurate, that he's like, you know, defense isn't that hard to teach. Like, we can deal with different defensive coordinators as long as they're good. I mean, it's how much do you really need to teach? How many defensive play calls are there in a game? So I'm not worried about keeping the system or keeping the playbook on the defensive side.
Yeah.
And I know as an offensive coordinator, this is why I criticize like the Jets hiring Robert Saleh, because Saleh comes in as a defensive coach and, you know, that's great. But, you know, he has Mike LaFleur as his offensive coordinator. As soon as he has success, he's going to get a head coaching job. Now what are you going to do at coordinator? Whereas, you know, the offensive system is going to stay the same with Sean McVay or with Kyle Shanahan. Defensively, doesn't matter. Just find a good coach. And, you know, that's something that he will do that Bill won't do.
All right,
has to be somebody from within.
Let's pick this up on the other side with your call, 617-779-0985. Couple open lines if you want to grab them. Also, where the Patriots land in the landscape of the AFC going forward and some other dribs and drabs that Bedard picked up from the Super Bowl, all coming your way in our long commercial-free segment next.
Hey, it's Greg Bedard from BostonSportsJournal.com. It's January, the time of year we're bombarded with weight loss commercials. Gyms, exercise equipment, diet plans, and full-service programs like Awaken 180 Weight Loss. No matter who's advertising, it's good to see so many people taking the steps to get healthy. Awaken 180 won't discredit alternative methods for weight loss. If other programs have you feeling full, energized, and has a plan for keeping the weight off, feel proud. If you haven't selected a program yet, I suggest doing what I did and check out Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Set up a consultation, ask questions, and have enough information to decide if it's right for you. To answer a few questions now, yes, it's easy. No, the gym isn't required, and yes, Awaken 180 provides free support for life after you lose the weight. I've now lost 60 pounds, and each week I'm getting closer to my goal thanks to Awaken 180. 7 locations. I go to the newest in Auburn. Book your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You look at the Bengals and you go, they're young. They'll be back.
But I also
Dan Marino was never back.
I've caught myself on that thought three times tonight where I've literally gone, I bet you Marino, Duper, and Clayton were all saying the same thing, too. We'll be back. We're this good.
Marino's admitted to that.
I know.
He thought he'd be back three or four times.
It's fragile. It's fragile. I mean, I bet you Patrick Mahomes 4 years ago would have been like, I'm going to have more than one Super Bowl by this time.
Well, remember, you know? After they won their first one, you had some of those guys popping off about winning six in a row. Let's just focus on one at a time.
Yeah.
One thing we have learned in recent years.
It is hard.
We got spoiled by the Patriots.
That's right.
It is so freaking hard to get to a Super Bowl and win it.
Yes.
Which I think underscores how ridiculous the Patriots' accomplishments were.
It's amazing.
That they were able to win six.
I know.
It is so freaking hard to do it.
In the era where it's more equal than ever. I mean, it's more equal than ever. That's where Belichick, Brady, all of them, it's phenomenal. It really is. Rams, it's impressive enough that they went to two out of the last four Super Bowls. I'm like, oh, look at this team. They're a staple in the NFL. Two out of four.
All right, let's get ridiculous. Which of these two teams do you think has a better chance to be back next year?
Man.
If you have to pick one or the other, I'd say neither. But if you have to pick one or the other,
I'd probably still go with the Rams.
Florio and Sims there to get us into that. Answer the same question. Which team is more likely to get back next year?
Rams.
I would agree, and I'd also agree with Florio that I don't think either will. And, you know, for all my pumping up of the Rams, they're going to have to reset here eventually, like every team does. And I don't know if Stafford, as much as I think he's good, I don't know if he's that elite guy that sort of guarantees you final eight, final four every year, which I think the Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes and those guys are going to be at that round every year. I don't know if Stafford gets you there. And so, like, it does sort of feel like the Rams sort of loaded up, one run, all in, now they got it, and they're going to be do a reset of some kind, I think.
Right, and some Patriots fans, you know, the in-build we trust people will be like, well, see? You know, you can't do it consistently like we did. When you just have to realize that was once upon a time in America, like just a dreamlike scenario for 20 years.
But
it aligned with the quarterback and the coach. And what's wrong with going to and almost winning, you know, Super Bowl every 3 or 4 years?
The Rams have had five straight winning seasons, five straight, four playoff appearances, two Super Bowl appearances, one championship.
And a lot with Jared Goff.
That's a nice run.
Pretty good.
That's a nice run. Thank your lucky stars if that's who you are. And at some point, you've got to flip over some of the roster pieces and take a step back. Well, that's what it's going to have to be. I know we started getting into this a little bit the other night. If you think your sustainability here in New England was because of your drafting or your cap management or any of this, I just think you're sorely mistaken. I think your sustainability was because of the brilliance of Tom Brady first and the excellence of Bill Belichick second. And that's it. Those guys were better than everybody else. So whether they spent or didn't spend, drafted well or didn't draft well, those two mostly had it over their opponents. And so you were good every year. That's why you were good every year. I to me, this thing about spending responsibly to sustain success is a fool's errand. Even if you're responsible spending, you're going to have ups and downs in the draft. Even good drafting teams go through lulls. It's what it is. It's hard.
I mean, what do you think the Patriots did last offseason? That wasn't responsible spending. That was, holy crap, our roster is terrible. We need to import talent. So we might actually have a shot at a winning season next year. So we're going to do that, even though we might take some bad contracts like Jonnu Smith and, you know, Isaiah Wynn and other people like that.
I mean, I just think the teams that are going to be sustainable are the Chiefs and the Bills. And you know, these teams, because their quarterback, no matter what else they've done right or wrong, is going to get them to a certain level. And they're not going to win every year, but that's what's sustainable. Everything else goes up and down. So the Rams are going to go up and down, you know, unless they back themselves into a real elite guy, you know, a top five versus the top 10 guy they have now. But either way, I do think the Bengals are going to have that Super Bowl hangover. I think that was good news for you. There's one more thing that you wanted to get into, Greg, before we got to the back to the phones. And something stood out to you in our conversation last week with Matthew Judon. When we sat down with him and, you know, we asked him about what happened, you know, towards the end of the year. And he basically said it wasn't injury related. He said, we just played some good teams. We weren't playing our best ball. You can't do that at the end of the season. No excuses. Wish I could be like this person got hurt, but that wasn't it. It was just that we weren't playing good football. I think after like two games, everybody tried to start making a play. Like, I'm going to be that player that does this. I'm going to be the player that does that.
instead of just playing within the defensive scheme. And I think that's what happened. Just real quick, he followed up by saying, we have a system, we have a scheme, and it wasn't a breakdown in that. It was just execution, honestly. So your thoughts on that comment?
I mean, it was music to my ears. It was what I told you guys and the listeners the last month of the season, that I was watching the film, and it wasn't about them just not having the personnel or whatever. It was guys were not in the right position. They weren't doing what they're told. Every week it was another guy who was adding to the list of you know, things that they weren't doing correctly. I mean, including like J.C. Jackson in the final two games. You know, I'm watching their defensive backs, and increasingly guys are turning around and looking for the ball instead of when they were doing their job back in, like, you know, 2011 and 2012. You had crappy defensive backs, but you know what? They all, balls in the air, I'm going to the guy, I'm gonna get my arm in there and go, you know, get the ball up through and break it up. You know, like Sterling Moore on, Lee Evans. What happened? Whereas J.C. Jackson's like, sort of like Malcolm Butler at the end. Well, I'm going to be a free agent. I'm going to make plays. I'm going to turn around and, oh, I'm going to come up short on a ball. Or, you know, Devon Godchow just sometimes not wanting to play. You know, and Matthew Judon, I would have liked to have heard him say, look, I wasn't perfect either. I was as guilty as anybody down the stretch, because he was. You know, we documented how his play fell off from not just the production, but in terms of doing what he was supposed to do and setting the edge and, you know, worry about things. He brought up getting chipped and extra guys. That wasn't what it was. That's not why his production plummeted. It plummeted because he all of a sudden, and I heard this from people around the team, said that after the bye, he did not have the same energy, did not have the same juice. He did talk about being in better shape. Maybe that was part. Maybe he just ran out of gas at the end of the season because Bill played him all the time, you know, for 2/3 of the season. It's just like, why is he in the game? And so, you know, it was just nice to hear him be honest about what went on with the team, because that's what they showed on film and that's what they were.
Just quickly, because the end of that comment that you read, and obviously that he said to us, where he goes on and he says it wasn't a breakdown or anything. It was lack of execution. Is that what he said at the end?
Yeah, go ahead.
What's the difference? What's the difference between breakdown and I didn't say communication breakdown or what's the difference between a breakdown and lack of execution? You got smoked at the end of the year. So, no, I don't know.
Well, I know. I mean, I understand his point because, like, you know, a lot of their issues with discipline happen in the running game towards the end of the year, where it's like, you know, on paper, these guys are supposed to be in this gap and they're not supposed to move. And instead you got Devon Godchow getting pushed all over the place, or Christian Barmore coming up the field instead of staying in his gap, or Carl Davis, the same sort of thing. Like, that's a lack of execution. Like, the play call is fine. A lot of times I didn't have a whole lot of issues with defensive play calls, even though some of them I didn't love. Certainly, the Dallas game and other things that we went through. But in terms of play calls, I thought they were fine. It's just you expect as a play caller, and this goes on offense too, for the guys to do their job and be where they're supposed to be.
Right.
So that when they do run into this gap, there's somebody there and they're cutting them off, and now we have somebody backside pursuit. None of that stuff was going on with the Patriots. So to me, that is a lack of execution. The play calls were fine. The scheme was fine. Yes, they lack talent to make up for, you know, not doing your job.
Okay, so this is what I'm asking, though. You view breakdown as a play calling thing. I view breakdown as you didn't get the job. You made the wrong decision.
Right.
You didn't set the edge. You didn't fill the right gap. That's a breakdown. Okay, so, like, then you played stupid. The defense played stupid. Like, and again, I'm not trying to put words in Judon's mouth. I just, like, what did he mean by that? Like, I'm obsessing over it. But, you know, when he says it's execution versus breakdown, well, dude, if you're not setting the edge and you're going after the quarterback all the time, that's sort of the same thing. Like, do your job.
All right, as promised, we'll pick it up on the other side. Everything we've hit on today at 617-779-0985. First, a quick update from Big Jim Murray. Update you on the Patriots news from today.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Miller Lite, official partner of the Boston Celtics, would like to say cheers to 75 years of Boston Celtics basketball, to 17 banners, to the players, coaches, and staff from yesterday and today. And, of course, cheers to Celtics fans everywhere. So raise the original light beer to this storied franchise and cheers to another 75 years of Boston Celtics basketball. From your friends at Miller Lite, it's game time, it's Miller time.